Welcome to the Straight Talk Physio Podcast with your hosts, Dr. Andrew Junak and Dr. Craig Giambattista. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the cues and tips that we use in the clinic to keep athletes training without completely giving up on specific movements. You'll learn a whole bunch of tips that you can use in the gym today to modify your workouts and move better with less pain. So, Craig, why don't you kick us off and talk a little bit about pain and aggravating factors and why they're important.
Sure. So as we know, we're obviously huge proponents of movement-based stuff and exercise. And just kind of on the whole, when we first talk about it, you think, oh, well, I'm just going to go set up an exercise program, which, you know, I'm just going to, you know, type it in online. They're going to tell me what to do and all this other stuff. And sometimes it doesn't really go, you know, as planned. And that could mean, well, this movement doesn't feel quite right. Or maybe I feel like I'm working too hard, or I'm not working hard enough, or maybe I'm a little bit too sore, or maybe, like, you know, something just feels tweaked or not quite right when I'm doing, you know, this specific movement. So today what we're going to do is kind of share some of the techniques that we might use to help people kind of modify what we're doing in the clinic, and then send them out, you know, back into the gym and kind of teach them some things that they might do. Now, of course, this isn't an exhaustive list, or this is absolutely not meant to, you know, treat anyone's pain. But I think that, you know, movement-based stuff is really user-friendly, and it's, we push for independence all the time. So if you could maybe take a couple of tips from today and try to implement those tips, that's kind of be our goal. But as always, if you are having some pain with movement, or something doesn't feel quite right, or if you have some questions on this kind of stuff, you know, see your physical therapist. That's what we're here for. This is, you know, literally our exact area of expertise. So, you know, find someone that's good with, you know, orthopedics and kind of go from there. But I think today's talk could serve as just kind of like a nice little base layer, or like a jumping point for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many different things that you can do to really modify a movement or make a movement work that currently isn't working. So I'm really excited for this one, because I think it's probably, out of all the podcasts we've done, it's probably the most practical, and it's one of the ones that you can actually take and implement just right away. You can go to the gym today, and then you can implement some of this stuff if you have a painful shoulder or a painful hip, painful low back, and then you can, you know, potentially move a lot better throughout your workout, whatever that may be. So to get started, I'd say one of the first things that we tend to look at, or at least this is a big thing in rehab, is volume. Volume tends to give us a little bit of information as to whether or not someone is ready to complete a movement. So for example, if you haven't deadlifted in, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, and then you're going to go back to the gym and you're going to do a whole bunch of deadlifts, you know, a lot of times that sets the stage for a re-aggravation of an injury, or it may even bring on a new injury that you never had before. And the reason is because you have not built up volume within that specific movement. That being said, what is volume? Volume is the amount of weight that you're doing times the number of sets that you're doing, or rounds if you're talking CrossFit, times the number of repetitions. So any of those variables are things that we can modify or tweak in order to help decrease your volume or deload you a little bit. So you can decrease the rep scheme, you can change the number of rounds or sets within your workout, and then you can also, another nice way to change your volume over the course of time is by changing the number of training days per week. So a lot of times I'll see maybe a CrossFit athlete who will come in and they'll say, hey, I have shoulder pain and I'm getting all these flare-ups. Well, they notice their flare-ups are coming on days where they're doing lots of pushing. And what we find is oftentimes they're pushing maybe 3 to 4 days a week, and they work out 5 to 6 days a week. So just by decreasing that training volume, we can actually alleviate some of the flare-up. By taking out some of the reps that people are doing, you can actually decrease the flare-up that would come afterwards. So there's a lot of things you can do to play with volume to really make a huge difference in your ability to train and train without pain. Is that something that you do similarly, Craig?
Yeah, I would say you hit the nail right on the head there. And, you know, when we're talking about, you know, sets and reps, we also got to think, I think you mentioned it first, is weight. So the intensity or the load at which you're, you know, kind of working all this volume in. And I think the way that we tend to look at that is, if you want to get down a little more in the science-y road, if you're someone that's into this kind of stuff, if instead of saying, you know, this is how much weight I'm going to use, you might use something called a percent of your one rep max. And there's calculators out there to find that. It's very simple to do. And some people like to work in a percentage of it, whereas some people like to work at like an effort. So There are two kinds of people out there, and I would say some of my patients, I'll say, you know what, go find your one rep max, and if we're going to do higher reps, we're going to do a little bit of lower on that percentage, and if we're going to do low reps, we might do a little bit higher on that percentage. So that's one thing you can modify as far as the load is concerned. Other times I'll say, you know what, if you don't like the math part, or if you don't feel comfortable, you know, calculating this percentage using an online calculator, you can go by, you know, rate of perceived exertion. So after you move a weight for a certain period of time, I might say rate it out of 10. And you say, you know what, that was like 8 out of 10 after I did this 12 times, you know, so we can kind of use that as a marker as well. So just one thing to play around with, definitely load management. And if we're talking about, you know, in the rehab setting, at least the term I use a lot is something called an intolerance to load. So typically, when we're talking about a painful area, I'll kind of describe it as that specific part of your body is now intolerant to the load that's put on it. So modifying the load, typically in our world, decreasing it can tend to be helpful. And for all those like science nerds listening out there, not to worry. There is some research out there that does show that you can still get muscle hypertrophy, which is just the fancy word for muscle growth, if we're doing high volume and high reps. So I'm talking like, you know, 20 to 24 sets in 1 week, but that's a lot of sets. And you can even be working at as low as like a 40 to 60% of your one rep max. So you can really decrease the volume or decrease the load, excuse me, and still get good benefits as long as you got the other stuff right, like the sets and reps. So typically your body will tell you when you're doing too much or not enough, but just know that, you know, changing the load is absolutely one of our biggest things that we tend to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think changing the load is usually where I start with a lot of people. I'll say like, hey, if you're typically doing 135 with this specific weight, let's drop it down to, you know, 115 and see what it feels like. If that feels great, keep going. You're free to proceed. You kind of get like a green light. I'll use like a green, red, and yellow light system. You know, a red light is, you know, there's a lot of pain there, maybe greater than 2 on like a pain scale. A yellow light is, well, you know what, the first repetition, it felt a little tight or it felt a little off. The yellow light is kind of proceed with caution. Do a few more, see if it gets better. If it continues to worsen, then you've moved over to a red light. Don't keep going. You know, your green light is, hey, this position feels good. It's not causing any discomfort, any pain, and then continue pressing on. So that being said, some other things that I use in the clinic is I will change what I consider the context of the movement. So there's a lot that you can do here when it comes to the context of a movement. And what I mean by that is more so your hand and foot position. So let's pretend like you're having pain with squatting and you're getting pain in the groin. You find that at the very depth of your squat, you get this sharp discomfort. And then when you press out of it, it goes away. One thing that you can do is you can play around with your foot stance. So you can try to bring your feet a little bit wider and then try that squat again. You can bring your feet a little bit more narrow in and try that squat again. See which one feels better. If neither of them feel better, the next option you can do is you can combine that with a little bit of external rotation of your feet or of your femurs. So what you can do is point your toes out just a little bit. And then sometimes if somebody has a little bit of discomfort in the groin, they can actually squat without experiencing pain. Same thing goes for like a shoulder press if you're using a barbell. So you're pressing overhead, you get pain in the front of your right shoulder. You can alter your hand placement on the barbell. So you can go a little bit wider. You can go a little bit more narrow and see if it changes it. If you find that no matter what, it doesn't change it, then you might need to kind of make a couple of the other tweaks that we talk about here today. But at the start, a lot of times just altering or changing the position of your hands or your feet or hips can make a huge difference in your ability to move without pain. And Craig, do you want to talk a little bit about time and how time plays a role in all this?
Yeah, so once you get your weight down, our intensity or our load, and then your sets and your reps, the next big thing you're probably thinking about, consciously or not consciously, is how much time are you resting in between those sets? And, you know, depending on what your goal is, it might be a little bit of longer rest period, it might be a little shorter rest period. But if we're going back to that, you know, load and volume tolerance that we're trying to figure out, we might want to consider, you know what, I only waited 30 seconds between this exercise, but if I wait a minute and a half, I tend to feel way better. So I would say, pending, you know, what your goal is, typically I would say when we're looking for more strength training, like, you know, maybe our lower reps, our higher percentage of that one rep max, you might be waiting a little bit longer, you know, 1 minute to maybe even 4 or 5 minutes. Whereas if we're kind of looking for more, you know, muscle endurance or like that muscle hypertrophy or muscle growth, we might be waiting a little less period of time. So maybe 30 to 60 seconds. So I would say, listen to your body in this specific realm. Me personally, I typically tell people if you're doing some of the bigger lifts, you know, your barbell work, maybe err on the side of a little higher rest period. That just tends to be me personally. But I think just kind of knowing that some groups like to only rest 30 to 60 seconds, some groups like to rest 1 to 5 minutes, you know, depending on the goal and the person, just know you got a lot of wiggle room there. So I would say try to find out, you know, what's best for you in that specific scenario. Anything you typically talk about with time, whether it be, you know, in between sets or even like time-wise as far as like speed is concerned, like timing a movement?
Yeah, I think there's two different things. Since I work with a lot of CrossFitters, their workouts kind of just, they just don't stop. So there's no rest for them. So typically what I'll do is I will tell them to kind of not worry so much about the clock. You know, listen to your body. If, you know, don't race the person next to you for, you know, while you're injured. Wait till you're fully healed. And then if that's something that you like to do, or you're competing with your friends, then go ahead and do that. But while you're injured, you know, give yourself a little bit more of a rest break in between rounds, you know, almost program in some of those rest breaks for you. In terms of speed, usually I'll try to instruct people to go a little bit slower during their movements. I know that sounds kind of goofy and maybe even counterintuitive, but sometimes I'll find that people will have pain with a strict pull-up on the lowering part, maybe some shoulder pain or some neck pain. But if you're doing like an eccentric type of movement where you start above with your chin above the bar and you slowly lower down, even though there's more time under tension there, it's a more controlled movement. So because you're moving in a slower, almost at a slower speed, what will end up happening is your body interprets and processes that information very differently than if you're moving it at a very fast speed, or you're trying to hurry up and finish the rep, or you're just dangling off your arms, letting yourself fall. So I will instruct people to move a little bit slower with certain movements that do aggravate their pain or we know are going to cause them some issues in the long run. Craig, what do you do as far as, let's say you have somebody who has pain with a barbell and, you know, they're really sold like powerlifters. I think that's a great example. Everything they do is barbell related. You know, what are your recommendations for someone who's kind of in that position where everything they do is super training specific and they don't want to move away from the barbell? Like, what can you do about that?
So there's two separate things that I like to talk about here. And sometimes when we're talking about maybe some, you know, pathology or something is not going right with the barbell, maybe there's an accessory thing we need to work with, or maybe like we need to, you know, change some of our parameters we talked about before, our volume, our intensity and our load and our time. That's typically where I'll go first, or maybe even the speed of the motion. So any of those things up into this point, I think are great to change. But sometimes I'll have people work unilaterally. So like, let's say the bench press, for example, the strict barbell approach is just not working quite right. We can switch over to dumbbells. So just kind of focusing on a little bit of unilateral arm control. And that could be two dumbbells at the same time. That could be one dumbbell at a time where we're still getting the bench press motion, but we're just kind of changing it up a little bit. As far as the lower body is concerned, I'll kind of do the same thing as well with like a traditional back squat, for example. We can move to like a weighted Bulgarian split squat or a reverse lunge, you know, or something kind of in that range. Not to say that, you know, if you want to get stronger at squatting, you absolutely need to squat. But sometimes if something is a little buggy or just not quite right, if you start doing some unilateral stuff, it might become a little bit more apparent. And, you know, we're not trying to self-diagnose here or anything like that, but sometimes just kind of switching up that kind of stuff can help you maybe realize a deficit that you might not see if you're doing maybe constant barbell work. Is that something that you tend to see in the CrossFit world, or what about anything you tend to use when it comes to, you know, barbell training? Or do you do bilateral stuff? Do you do unilateral stuff? I guess what's your opinion on that one?
I think honestly, to maintain injury free, I think you need a mixture of both. You know, I think the barbell movements allow you to get a lot more volume in than some of the unilateral movements. But at the same time, the unilateral movements work muscles that you don't quite get to activate through bilateral movements like barbell work. So I definitely think that there's a place, a time and place for both of them. So usually in rehab, if I'm being completely honest, I'm doing almost always unilateral movements. And that's 99% of the time because people have a unilateral dysfunction. You know, they have an issue one side versus the other. So I'm spending more time doing unilateral work because I'm going to hit a little bit more of those accessory muscles, like with a Bulgarian split squat, a single leg RDL, a lateral step up that I'm just not going to hit with your standard squat. Obviously, you're still activating some of those same muscles. It's more so about the percentage of work that's being done by a specific muscle group that I'm trying to bias or I'm trying to load specifically over another muscle group. So yeah, you'll find me if you're hanging out with me in the clinic or you see me doing some stuff in the gym, I'm definitely doing a lot of unilateral work with dumbbells or kettlebells versus more the, I guess you could say the traditional barbell sorts of movements. And now that being said, if somebody is having pain with a barbell, say they're deadlifting and they're like, hey, I just can't figure this out. I only have pain when I deadlift, or I only have pain when I back squat. Then we're going to break out the barbell and we're going to watch them squat and deadlift and see what's happening when their pain starts. So that being said, like, there is still a place for barbell movements in rehab. Absolutely. Because we definitely need to make sure that technique and form and those sorts of things are on point.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And just kind of moving on, so let's getting out of the maybe the weight training world a little bit. One thing that I get questioned a lot is, especially with like lower extremity stuff, is, you know, running hurts. So I think it brings up our next point, which is changing the mode of which you do a specific exercise. And I typically see this a little come up a little bit more with cardio stuff. So instead of going on the treadmill, it can be as simple as switching to the rower or the elliptical or the arc trainer. And I think people kind of wonder why, you know, like it's all the same. I'm running or using the bike even. It's like, I'm still, my heart rate's still increasing. Why does it feel any different on the rest of my body? And lower in the, you know, in the lower limbs specifically, the example I typically like to use, and because there's a lot of good research out there on it, is like the joint reaction force on the knee, for example. So the treadmill compared to the elliptical, much less on the elliptical to the bike, you know, less on the bike. So when we're talking about load tolerance and, you know, maybe modifying some things, we can kind of use it as a, well, let's see what is a little less impactful, but we can still get the same benefit. Because when we're talking cardio, basically we just need a sustained increase in heart rate. And if we can achieve that with causing a little less joint irritation based off, you know, some joint reaction forces, pending on the, you know, the mode you choose to use, I think it's helpful. And I think some people just view it as, well, I need to do cardio, so all cardio is created equal.
Yeah, honestly, I think from a cardio standpoint is definitely by changing the mode, it can make a huge difference. So for example, let's say somebody has plantar fasciitis and it aggravates when running. Well, if they're rowing, they're not going to have those symptoms. Achilles tendon pain is another very common injury in runners that tends to be do great with other types of modes of exercise. So I see that pretty frequently. The nice thing is in a lot of the spaces that I work in, we have access to a bike, a rower, and we obviously have access or the ability to run as well. So it's very easy to make that change or make that shift. If you can't make that shift, like say you're a runner and you have no access to a rower, no access to a bike, you know, your other option is you can decrease, or you can look at that volume perspective and try and decrease your mileage over time, or decrease your number of training sessions, but continue to keep your same amount of mileage. So you can do a lot of different things. It's not totally exclusive to, you know, you have to, if you can't run, you have to row, or you have to do something else. But that is a really good, solid recommendation. And I think that almost works better in many cases than continuing to try and do the aggravating factor and doing it less. Because like you said, from a cardio standpoint, our goal is to maintain and sustain a certain type, a certain heart rate over a period of time. So if you're able to do that, it almost doesn't matter what it is that you're doing. You can swim, you can bike, you can run. It doesn't matter. Now, if you're training for a marathon, then obviously you want to spend that time running, or as much of that time running as possible, because there's going to be an immediate carryover. But if you're just doing it for fitness, you know, that increase in heart rate is an increase in heart rate.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And kind of speaking on, you know, some of this changing the mode and maybe working on, you know, playing around with what kind of joint reaction force we're getting. I think our next one would be changing from maybe a weight-bearing to a non-weight-bearing or modified weight-bearing position. I would say I tend to do that a lot in the clinic, and it kind of goes along the line with our load tolerance. So a couple, and we do this in rehab a lot, but a couple examples I would say is, for example, if you're having trouble with squat, maybe we're just not ready for that specific movement. Squat would be our, you know, quote unquote weight bearing activity, whereas a modified weight bearing version of that could be maybe like a hack squat or a leg press, versus a, you know, relatively non weight bearing would be like a leg extension machine or the leg curl machine. And I know a lot of times in the rehab world and in the fitness world, the machines get a bad rap, and I think for the right person, they're good. Even if that is a small portion of the population, you know, and I think that I tend to, I'll use it, but not, you know, overly like a power lifter, triathlete, you know, someone training for a half marathon, we'll probably stray away from the machines. We still might do them, but that shouldn't be like our focus of treatment. But if it's someone first getting into weight training, then they might not be ready for squatting, or it might be too advanced of a movement, or they might be too weak to do it. Then saying like, let's try a modified weight bearing or non-weight bearing position before we get into maybe some of the heavier stuff. I don't know if that's something, I know you tend to work with the higher level athlete, but is there any sort of reason, at least in the CrossFit world or the higher level population, that you might say, this might be a good time to move to maybe a lesser weight bearing position?
Yeah, I would say there's quite a bit of times where you might find that can be beneficial. You know, I think one common one is the push-up. A lot of times people have the pain with like a certain type of push-up. In CrossFit, we do almost more of a ballistic movement where we're taking our hands off the floor and then we're pushing. And it's a little, I'd say it's more explosive than a typical push-up would be, you know, just by changing the position of that and maybe going to a more standing position, more upright position for that wall, like a wall push-up. That's one way you can do it. You can also do a push-up on a box. So basically bringing yourself a little bit more upright. A lot of things that we do in rehab in terms of low back pain also tend to benefit from changing positions to whether we're laying on our stomach flat on the ground, whether we're laying on our back flat on the ground and doing a movement. You know, what you'll find is if you have pain standing up and bending forward in your low back, if you were to lay down flat on your back and then pull your knees to your chest, essentially trying to put you almost in the same position, just one is standing up and one is laying down, you'll find that the pain's going to be a lot less. So there is some benefit to changing weight bearing to non-weight bearing or more of a modified weight bearing position. And we also do this a lot with handstand pushups, I would say, like our handstand pushup progression. You know, we might start out with wall walks, progress to like handstand pushups in a pike position on a box, and then from there go into complete handstand weight bearing up against the wall, and then move away from the wall where you don't get that external cue, and into like a handstand walk. So there's definitely a place for you know, moving from a like more modified or non-weight bearing position to a weight bearing position, or vice versa, to achieve some sort of therapeutic effect or even a training effect so that we can improve performance. So yeah. You know, what are some tools that you've used as far as like, you know, weight bearing to non-weight bearing, or even just like changing range of motion? Like if you have a patient that is having a lot of trouble with, you know, maybe touching their chest with a bench press, or maybe pulling from the floor a certain way, like do you have any modifications that you do there? Because I know deadlifts, people always want to do deadlifts when they have back pain, and sometimes they can't even get into that position. Do you have any recommendations there?
Yeah, and I think that there can be kind of like a common misconception in like the strength and weight training world that if you're going to perform one of these movements, like I'll talk specifically squat, bench, and deadlift, because those are some things that I'm pretty familiar with, that you need to utilize the full range of motion every time. And I would lobby to say that that isn't true. I think we need to figure out a way that you can move and it feels, you know, quote unquote good, and you can, you know, perform, you know, relatively good form and complete the motion. I think that can be satisfactory if we're in a spot to where we might not be ready to do the full movement yet, but we're kind of working towards it. So a couple examples, I would say the big one is it's okay to not squat to depth every time. That might be an unpopular opinion. I think there are, times and places Ooh. That we need to use our full knee range of motion when we're squatting, you know, like, and I'll teach people to do that. I will absolutely teach people to do that. But is it okay to go not all the way to parallel sometimes, or if you're just learning how to squat, or if we're working, you know, you were just in rehab and now we're getting back into squatting, or, you know, you just had surgery, you know, there's many factors that not doing a full range of motion, squat is perfectly okay. So I think that altering the range of motion is fine. You know, you might need the help of a healthcare provider like a physical therapist to do that. But, you know, there are many times when you can try that yourself, especially with the bench press. Sometimes I'll have people bench with a couple blocks on their chest. That is a very common Olympic lifting and powerlifting theory. And we're not here to talk about the, you know, the super advanced aspects of that. Some people spend their whole lives trying to get better at that. But I would say if a guy can bench press 800 pounds and sometimes he benches with a couple blocks on his chest, I'd venture to say that that's okay and safe to do. And as far as the deadlift is concerned, especially if we're kind of working through some of our deadlift progressions where you're just coming off some back pain, or, you know, we're working on some lower extremity mobility, deadlifting from a rack or from a couple elevated pads is absolutely okay. Even sometimes I'll alter range of motion when we're trying to like tweak form or try to perfect a movement. Like sometimes people will come in and say, you know, I've been bench pressing since I was in high school, you know, and, but we kind of find some things that maybe modifying here or there tend to feel better. And we might begin through, you know, an altered range of motion. So I don't know if that's something that in the CrossFit world, I know you guys do, you know, a couple different movements, maybe a little more advanced movements where the bar is traveling a little bit longer. Is that something that you see in your world? Because I know you guys are like hand cleaning and power cleaning and, you know, overhead pressing and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, with movements like that, they're a lot more explosive from the floor. Usually I'll just modify the position. So for example, if power cleans are in a workout and a patient has really bad back pain to where they can't even tolerate bending over without a barbell, there's no way I'm going to have them try to power clean that. So a better movement for them might actually be a hang clean. Less range of motion. They don't have to, you know, bend and put all that compressive force on their low back with the bending and pulling from the floor. So that tends to be tolerated a lot better. But I do want to touch on, I mean, you mentioned you opened the can of worms of squat depth. You know, this is huge where people get this idea that they have to go ass to grass with every single squat that they do. And, you know, that you have to do that. It's totally not true. It really depends on your goals and it depends on your sport too. You know, CrossFit does require, you know, a deeper squat as part of their movement standards. So that's okay there. But if you're training a vertical jump, you will never squat ass to grass when you're preparing to do a vertical jump. So if you're really training, like, you know, if your goal is to increase your vertical and you're trying to dunk a basketball, you don't need that much squat depth. You know, there's some sports where, you know, squatting isn't a huge part of it. You know, you need strength and you need power and speed, but you don't necessarily need to squat all the way down and attain that full range of motion every single time in order to build that strength. So are the benefits of squatting deep? Yeah. Are there benefits to not squatting deep? Yeah. It depends on basically what you're training for and essentially what sport you're trying to perfect. But yeah, that's kind of my, my soapbox there.
And on the opposite end, the people I tend to see, if I see, you know, a patient, you know, Ethel, and she's 88 years old and her main concern is getting off her couch at home. And that just means she's squatting to a 60 degrees of knee flexion. I'm not going to be grilling her that she can't get ass to grass in the clinic. You know, just not, it's not going to happen. So I think
you're not going to get on Ethel for that. You're not going to let her know.
No. So I think that there's that spectrum, you know, and it has to be, the movement has to fit the person and the task. So as long as you feel like you can check those boxes, then I think that, you know, modifying range is, you know, a pretty good idea. And just, you know, in that same vein, if we're talking about range of motion is one thing. So the amount, you know, the joint is moving in space, but something else that is worth considering is the plane of motion. So can you speak to that a little bit? Is that something that you tend to utilize when we're talking modifications?
Yeah. So let's say, and this in some way, shape or form kind of goes back to what we talked about with like hand placement, right? So let's say you bring your arm straight up in front. So if you're watching me on video, you can see this and it hurts to do that. Well, a lot of times if you just bring your arm off to the side a little bit and raise your arm up, you can actually do it and not have any pain. So just by tweaking the angle that you're doing a movement or changing the plane that you're doing the movement in, it can oftentimes decrease the pain substantially. And this often happens with any sort of like a shoulder press or a push press. A lot of times if you're doing, let's say, a dumbbell shoulder press and your arm is very externally rotated when you do it and you get pain in the front of the shoulder. If you bring that arm in into almost more of a hammer grip, a lot of times you can do that movement with less pain or less discomfort. So just by tweaking the plane of motion that you're activating the muscles in, it'll start to activate different muscles or that same muscle, just not as much that is painful. So you're able to tolerate the movement much better and still get the benefits of working the muscle. And I think that's what's the most important. Other things I do from a plane of motion standpoint is I'll add in some rotational or anti-rotation movements. I do this a lot with my CrossFitters. I'll also put in a lot of frontal plane movements for them because CrossFit athletes, everything we do is pulling from the ground to overhead, or it's basically all in a sagittal plane. So it's all bending over and standing up, bending over, standing up, bringing our arms from, you know, down in front of us to up over our head. So it's tons and tons of pressing. We don't tend to get a lot of like abduction type movements or side to side movements. And we really don't get many rotational movements either. So that's where a lot of injuries lie is, you know, the sport in and of itself isn't 100% well-rounded in other areas, but we see that with every single sport. So it's not a knock against CrossFit. Every sport has its own set of injuries, its own set of, you know, areas where, you know, the athletes don't quite get as much of a certain thing. And that's just where the deficit lies. That's where you see the injuries, and that's what we address in rehab. So just across the board, there's always going to be something. There's always going to be something. There's no sport out there that has zero injuries that is 100% perfect. You're always using, you know, one plane of movement more than others. You're always, you know, having to do something that, you know, can potentially put your body at risk for some sort of injury. So, you know, that's kind of my soapbox with like plane of movement. Is there anything else you do differently in terms of plane of movement?
Typically what I'll tell patients is just kind of, it's one of those things that you don't realize you're doing it until someone tells you to look at it. So I'll just kind of have them police themselves. I'll say, when you're going to the gym, are you facing forward the entire time? And most people will say yes. So I typically say, well, try to add in some lateral movements. So if you're lunging, try side lunge, you know, or if you're, try some rotational cable chops, you know, are you doing things where you're rotating? Are you doing things where you're going backwards? Are you doing things where you're going to the side? Are you typically just kind of faced forward and either pushing, pulling, squatting, or hinging, you know, which is perfectly fine. You know, I would say those are the big movements anyhow, but sometimes we know that when you stick to the same thing for a while, cross training can be beneficial. And, you know, there's enough literature out there in the sports world that I would say, you know, would support it. Doesn't prove it, of course, but I typically say just be mindful of the plane that you're moving in. Cause I tend, like you said, people just, I think naturally tend to stick in the sagittal plane. That's just sort of our thing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So as far as like, say you have pain with a conventional deadlift, you know, have you ever thought about, or is there a point at which you decide to swap the movement completely, but you do it for something else?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I'll swap the movement if, you know, like you said, without getting into too much detail, is if we see someone that has been maybe new to deadlift or would like to learn how to deadlift, and it just, you know, doesn't seem to be going quite right, we can pick out some similar type movements. It's a little different story, I would say. Like if someone came in and says, I compete in deadlifting and now my deadlift hurts, you know, that's a little different story than I just want to work on my general fitness and I know the deadlift is a good exercise, you know, but it's not feeling quite right. So I would say for that person, there's many different ways we can modify that hinge movement, like by maybe using the trap bar instead, or maybe doing like a sumo type deadlift, or maybe deadlifting from an elevated surface, or like a rack pull, as people would call them. So I think that when we're talking about some of the big movements, you know, I would consider, at least I'll tell people, think of some movement that pushes, some movement that pulls, some movement where we have to hinge at our hips, and some movement where we have to squat down. So if it fits, I would put the deadlift in our hinging category. So if the deadlift doesn't feel quite right, I might say, well, let's look at a bunch of other hinging motions that are kind of similar and let's just try them out. Maybe at for this point in time, for that specific person, the deadlift just isn't right. It's something we could work to, but let's do something similar to it and get this, you know, similar effect. And then maybe we could revisit it later.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think that's a great point to make is, you know, you're not necessarily abandoning the movement by saying, hey, we're going from conventional to sumo or from sumo to trap bar. You're basically saying, hey, this movement just doesn't fit your body type, or this movement, you're not good at completing the movement pattern. So instead of risking injury, why don't we just do something else that's similar that your body just coordinates so much better? And I think that's okay, especially early on in training. Like if you have somebody who's just, you know, they're unable to figure it out, whatever it is, you know, the hip hinge motion, but sometimes if you put them in a trap bar, the hip hinge comes so much more naturally because you're bending forward. You're just in a different position. The load is distributed, you know, through your body rather than in front of your body. So you can pick that stuff up a lot better. I really like that. I would say that, you know, most of the people that I'm seeing, they're already trained in a lot of these lifts, and we might just be making one or two cues. But for people who aren't able to figure out these motions or get into some of these positions due to tightness or stiffness or, you know, some sort of joint restriction, that's awesome.
And I think, yeah, as long as you can get a good idea of I think the hard part is the type, like kind of knowing, like, is the bench press, is it a pull or a push? And if you kind of think about it, you're like, well, it seems like more of a pushing motion. What other pushing things can I do? So I would say that would be the little margin of error, is just knowing what to look for. But I think once you can figure that out, it tends to be, you know, it tends to work pretty well. And I think that kind of brings me to the next point, to where, you know, one modification might be just taking an exercise out of your routine. And I think that's okay. I think people get fearful of that. Like, oh, well, I can't do this exercise, so that means something bad is happening. I think that we're all built differently. We're all meant to move, you know, differently. And I think one movement for person A might not be a good movement for person B. And that's okay. Yeah. I can't say that there's, like, you know, some people would lobby to say, like, the squat is the perfect exercise, you know, and I would say it's a really darn good exercise, you know. Right. But is there one specific movement that I would say you know, you can't give it up? If you're exercising, you absolutely need to do this. You know, no, I don't think that exists. So don't be, you know, for anyone listening out there, don't be worried that you just can't do something. Like myself, for example, I would get really bad anterior front of the shoulder pain when I would do dips. So dips just maybe aren't a great exercise for me. I can do them in modified ranges. I can do them with altered loads, but can I go super heavy on dips anymore? No. If it's something I really wanted to work on, can I do it? Yes, but am I going to lose sleep over not being able to do a weighted dip? I think I'll be just fine.
Yep. Yeah. No, I totally agree. Taking exercise out of your routine isn't, you know, giving up on a movement or anything like that. It's just basically thinking that, hey, my body can't tolerate this right now. Now is not the time for this movement. Let's come back to it and try it again at another time. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. Doesn't necessarily mean something's torn or anything like that. It just means at this point in time, your body's not ready for it.
Yeah. And I think that little bit of peace of mind is something that patients tend to really appreciate, at least when I talk to them about it. It kind of takes, because I think anytime you have pain with anything, it tends to be a little, you know, anxiety provoking. So just sort of knowing that your body just might not be set up for this. And I know earlier I talked about machines being okay, but just not that I'm backtracking here, but if you think about an exercise machine that you might see at the gym, it's stuck in one specific plane of motion. Like your leg curl, it can only leg curl in one direction. It can only machine bench press in one direction. So if something doesn't feel quite right, you know, that specific machine wasn't made specifically for you. It was just somebody thought that, hey, this is how the average person moves, so I'm going to make a machine that moves in that average direction at this average speed, at this average type of weight. So if it doesn't feel right, then, you know, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, that's right on point. You know, and I think what you're saying is giving our viewers a lot of great information, because a lot of times people will jump to the worst. You know, their initial thought is, oh, I can't do this anymore. I'm never going to be able to do this again. Or, you know, a lot of times people don't know what's going on. So most of the time, what do? Naturally, we fear for the worst. So just by taking a thing or two out of your exercise routine, you know, it's a good thing to do if you're struggling to scale it or modify it in any sort of way. You know, you just go ahead, take it out, remove it for a week or so, and then maybe even try it again. return back to it and see what happens after a week. A lot of times what you'll find is that, you know, from doing your other workouts without that, you know, your shoulder or your hip or whatever it may be will get a little bit stronger in the meantime, and you might be able to tolerate that movement a little bit better. So that being said, Craig, you want to wrap us up, talk about some key points. I know we hit on a whole bunch of modifications, whole bunch of things that you guys can do at home, in your gym, you know, in your box, whatever it is that you like to do for fitness. You know, we hit on a whole bunch of things that you can do and try to take action to either alleviate your pain while you're training or, you know, find ways to train around it in the meantime while you're working with another rehab professional.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I think I'll just do a quick re-list of everything we talked about today, just to do a little summary. So when we're talking about modifications to your workout, consider changing the volume, which is weights times sets times reps, the intensity or the load, which is just essentially how much weight are you using. You could change the context of the movement, so maybe changing your hand or foot position. You could change the time, so the rest in between your sets. You could change the speed of the motion, so going slower and more controlled, or maybe moving quicker. You can change the unilaterally. That's a tough one to say. You could use either two hands with a barbell, or you could use one hand. We'll stick to that. You can change the mode of exercise. So maybe instead of using the treadmill, you try a rower, an elliptical, or the bike. You can move from weight bearing, meaning your feet or hands onto the ground, to non-weight bearing, feet or hands off the ground, or a different modify somewhere in between. You can change the range of motion or the plane of the movement, so the angle you're moving at. You can swap the movement out for something similar, or you could take it out altogether. So I would say those are at least the things we talked about today that I think we can be helpful. And kind of moving on to key points. Number one, don't completely give up on a movement because of pain. We listed a whole bunch of things to modify. Try that first. If you can't find a solution that allows you to move with little to no pain, then try scaling. So maybe try an easier exercise, or maybe working on some of our load management. The saying no pain, no gain is a lie. We don't like it. I would not recommend pushing through pain or training around pain instead. You know, there might be that 1% of people out there that we can say, you know, this saying is appropriate, but for the average person, by and large, you know, please don't have that mentality that I just got to keep pushing no matter what. But the biggest thing today, hopefully after listening to this talk, is that if you do have a lingering problem that's getting in the way of your training, this is not meant to be your home fix for it. See a physical therapist who specializes in treating orthopedic injuries. If you are pain-free and just getting into fitness, or if you're looking for some ways to modify stuff, you know, take these tips. It's really user-friendly, but it's a little bit of a different story when pain is present. When we're assessing and working with patients, all of these variables are going through our head all the time. And I think it takes a little bit more, I would say not a little bit more, a lot more expertise to change this stuff around to kind of make sure those painful movements stay not painful and to get you back to what we're doing. I think that's when you need to call in the heavies and see a professional.
Absolutely. I think you crushed those key points, Craig. You hit all the big ones. I mean, you know, it is super important for you to see a professional if you are dealing with pain. You know, don't take these different modifications as your recipe for treating your own issue. Oftentimes pain is a lot more complex than people like to give credit to. So just by, you know, doing these modifications, yeah, it's going to keep you training. It's going to keep you, you know, I know some people, at least in the CrossFit world that I see, when they can't train, they're really thrown off. They're really thrown off, like mentally, energy wise, physically, like they just feel very different than what they're used to feeling, because if they're used to being at the gym 6 days a week and having that social atmosphere, and that basically stress relief that they get from training, when that's taken away from them, it really has a huge impact on their life. So, you know, use this as a guide to keep you in the gym. Make sure that you also go and you do the right thing and you talk to a professional to make sure you get this sorted out, because these things do get worse. You know, it's not one of those things like, oh, I have a shoulder injury, it's always going to stay a minor injury. Things can escalate, things can get worse, and the goal is to stop as many people as possible from needing to get a surgery. And the way you do that is by going and seeing a professional. All right. So thank you for tuning into the Straight Talk Physio podcast. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean the world to us if you subscribe to this podcast and the Peak Physiotherapy Performance YouTube channel. For more information about us, check us out on Facebook at Peak Physiotherapy Performance and on Instagram at P3 Physiotherapy. For more information about Craig, you can follow him at DrCraigG_PT on Twitter and Instagram. If you have any topic suggestions, comments, or questions, then feel free to email us at thestraighttalkphysiopodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for watching, and we hope you have an awesome day.